Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few Black-owned radio stations, and you're live with the best mind in Black America, me, Shawna Williams, and this is the Cutting Edge Show. Justin Jackson is co-hosting with me. This evening, my guest is Caleb Clayman. He is an entrepreneur and a life and emotional intelligence coach, and he will be discussing building strong Black family units. Caleb, welcome to the Cutting Edge.
Yes, thanks for having me tonight.
You are welcome. How are you doing, and what is a life coach?
What am I doing, and what is a life coach? So,
no, how are you doing, and what is a life coach?
Oh, I've never had a bad day in my life. I'm absolutely doing amazing. As a life coach, what I do is I help people figure out how to achieve their goals. Like that's it in a nutshell. Whether it be finances, functioning as an entrepreneur, getting in shape, getting a promotion on the job, anything that they're trying to work towards, you put together strategies, take measurable actions, and then make sure that we're heading on the right trajectory to achieve the target.
How can the Black family unit be strengthened?
I think as it relates to strengthening the Black family, I think the first thing is really, spiritually being rooted in their beliefs. And what I mean by that is just having strong spiritual convictions, protecting their hearts. When the ancient Hebrews used to talk about protecting your heart, for out of it flows the issues of life, the heart was defined as your thoughts, your feelings, and your will. So the Black family has to really, really, get close and connected and in tune to the thoughts that they're having, how they feel about themselves, others, and circumstances that they encounter, and really have a clear vision for what they will do and what they will not do.
Okay. In many ways, the Black family unit still suffers from the ravages of slavery that did everything to destroy the family unit. And many of the negative effects are still seen today. How can we overcome this?
I agree with you. And that all really stems back to our thoughts, feelings, and our actions or our will. The reason that I say that is slavery at this point, not that we don't encounter systems of oppression and all the adversity that we encounter daily in our society, but our beliefs, what we really truly subscribe to, impact the actions that we will take in life. So if we subconsciously are still in bondage to those systems of oppression, we will find ourselves in circumstances where we will not take the necessary actions to find a system of uplift for ourselves and our families. So when Dr. Carter G. Woodson used to talk about, being mentally a slave or the miseducation of the Negro, a lot of times we have to be able to buck this system of oppression, and a lot of it is rooted in what we subscribe to, what we think and believe, and the types of ceilings that we place on ourselves.
Okay. Also, too many of our Black children have no vision, They have feelings of helplessness, complacency, etc. How can you help them to see beyond their current environment?
So, you know, we are not, that our environment definitely impacts us. But the reality, yet again, it goes back to our thinking and our feelings. So I'm going to give you an example.
Okay.
You know, children every day are put in situations where, because of their age, they can't really truly drive to the fullest extent possible the changes that they would like to see around them. A lot of times children feel helpless, exactly as you just described. So one thing that I do with children is I teach them to reflect as a you know, opposed to just responding to, you know, stimulus outside of them. So, you know, someone hits you, how do you react to that versus how do you respond? Typically, if someone hits you, you're going to hit them back. But if you take a moment and you reflect on that situation, you can ask yourself, am I truly in harm's way? And do I need to truly defend myself or can I retreat? And I think as we learn how to transition from everything being rooted in survival and we really begin to contemplate and embrace development and growth, making decisions that are more long-term and potentially have better returns on our investment of our time, our effort, our money, all those things, we can eventually accumulate something that will move us to, you know, a higher level of thought, higher level of action, and ultimately take us out of those places of complacency and really help us understand that, you know, despite the adversity that we face, we can, you know, control our own destiny.
I have another question. It has to do with, okay, I just want to go ahead and ask, but what would you tell a young girl that thinks becoming pregnant is proof or guarantee of love from the father who is not ready to be one?
I would truly, you know, just tell her, you know, to really think very deeply about, you know, her future. You know, having children, parenting, potentially have to do that on your own. You know, there's definitely, you know, that's embracing hardship, you know, undue hardship. When, you know, when you love yourself, you know, someone so much, my father used to tell me that men play on love for sex and women play on sex for love. And, you know, we got to teach our women to cherish their bodies. And to, you know, be very responsible and potentially wait until they meet a man who loves them and can provide for them and they can co-create together, you know, their future.
Okay, and what advice would you give a young black male who proudly boasts about children that he can't take care of?
You know, there's something about personal responsibility. Our scorecards in life, you know, tell a lot about, it tells us a lot about, you know, our aspirations. And, you know, that brother needs some life experiences to show him just how big the world is and how he can invest his time into something that's uplifting as opposed to something that can be very destructive and harmful to others. Frederick Douglass once said it's easier to build strong children than it is to build broken men. So I have a strong tendency to try to work with children as early as I can to help them understand what I'm going to call success principles and the types of thoughts and feelings that you need to really embrace, you know, to win, and the ones that you need to weaken, you know, the negative self-talk about yourself, others, and circumstances. You know, I give them tools to challenge those negative self affirmations so that they can continue to grow and aspire and to develop and to have a great life. A lot of people that are living, you know, as you just described, you know, they're only setting themselves up to hurt other people, and, you know, and it's people that they're supposed to genuinely love and take care of and nurture. And it's an ugly cycle.
I totally agree. And what can you tell a young black man to persuade him that the gangs, drug trades, guns, and the life of crime is not the answer? Especially when that's what they're used to and that's what they see.
You know, this is what I can say, you know, about me and kind of bring it full circle. When I got old enough to drive, my father, you know, I'm from Central Illinois, my father would send me to neighboring cities on weekends. And you know, I may get to travel to St. Louis or Chicago or Indianapolis, for instance. And I was actually able to travel to go to different churches, actually. But the point and the reason why he sent me to those places was because he wanted me to see that the world was much bigger than what I had experienced. And sometimes the biggest equalizer is just someone believing that something is possible. Many times when people are struggling and they're embracing, you know, self-destruction, you know, self-destruction is rooted in our beliefs the same way that, you know, finding a system of uplift is rooted in our beliefs. And for people that take hopeless routes, it's because they truly believe that life is hopeless. And if you believe that life is hopeless, you know, you will constantly find evidence of that. But if you are able to just catch a glimpse of just how big the world can be, you know, it opens up your mind to possibilities that prior to that didn't exist for you. And it allows you to see opportunities that you didn't see before that exact moment. I tell people all the time that, you know, leadership can't be taught, has to be discovered. But it's the same way with passion and all those other things that happen by knobs, you know, being turned inside of you, you know, that light, you know, ignites your soul and drive you to do something that you may not even have thought possible prior to you finding that switch. So for the kids that are heavy in the streets, you know, we just have to present them with enough opportunities for them to see that there's truly a different path that they can pursue. And then I think another thing that's very important is that teaching them about entrepreneurship and providing them with tools that will allow them to be able to, you know, take care of themselves. But there's so much that goes into that. Like, being financially secure is so much of a spiritual pursuit. You know, people that are unfulfilled, you know, they try to purchase contentment, and it shows up so many different ways. But when you find contentment, your heart of hearts, it allows you to be still and to be at peace and to be able to plan and to manage your resources in a way that even though you can be in the most difficult of circumstances, that you can still give yourself a fighting chance.
Justin, do you have any questions? Okay, if anybody has any questions or comments, you can dial 516-531-9540 and press 1. Okay, you mentioned success principles. What are some of the success principles that you teach people?
So, okay, let's talk about this for just a moment. So, this is kind of deep, but it's not really that deep. But innovation, success, you know, uplift all takes place in your mind before it ever, you know, before it ever is manifested in the natural. So one thing that I really challenge people to do is to think about their thinking. It's called metacognition. And one thing that I, you know, really great illustration of this is if we were to place two pianos in the same room and we were to lift the hoods of those pianos and we were to strike a single key, the piano on the other side of the room with that hood, it would actually engage the same string associated with the key that we struck. And that's a principle of vibration and frequency. So what I try to make people understand is that you cannot send out a negative vibe and a positive vibration at the same time. You either positive or negative. A really good example of it is open up Google and type in, do not search for LeBron James. And I guarantee you, if you type into Google search, do not look up LeBron James, the next 20, you know, the first 20 links that are going to pop up are going to involve LeBron James. That's the way that this success process works. You have to be able to get rid of hindering thoughts, disbelief, and doubt. And you have to be able to call into existence those things that you actually want. Most of us don't have a clue what we want. We just know what we don't want. So I teach a process called clarity through contrast. Some people just call it helpful thoughts, hindering thoughts. But I teach people to just write down a simple T-chart. On the left side of that T-chart, we're going to write everything negative that we don't like about a given circumstance. So let's say finances. We'll give this T-chart a title, we'll call it My Ideal Finances. And then on the left side of this T-chart, we are going to fully document, we're going to target 50 different statements about what we don't like about our finances. I don't like living paycheck to paycheck. I don't like that bill collectors are calling me. I don't like that my power's turned off. I don't like that I can't eat the quality of food that I want to eat. I don't like that I can't, you know, pay for my kids to be on traveling sports teams, whatever that may be. And most of us emotionally are connected to those feelings, to those thoughts. Like they stir us. But if someone was to say, okay, here's your affirmation for the day, I'm a millionaire. Well, you can wake up and put that next to your mirror every morning, and you can say it before you brush your teeth, you know, in the morning and before you go to bed. But that statement does not stir you because in your mind, it's not a possibility. It's not a reality. But when we go through and we document and we record all those negative statements, like that's very much our reality. And it may not be as bad as we think it is, but it surely feels that way. So at every turn we encounter that type of adversity, we accept that and we recreate those events. So what I do is I have them list all those negative things that really resonate with them. And then on the right-hand side of that T-chart, we then take that negative statement and we make it a positive statement. And what we're doing is we are rewiring our brain. We are rewiring our heart to stop resonating with the negative and to begin to...
I'm sorry. Somebody wants to ask you a question or make a comment.
Okay.
6120, question or comment for Caleb?
Yeah, how you doing? Excellent guest. So I guess based on what he's saying, it sounds like he's referring to mental laws and to a lesser extent of the law of attraction. But my question to you, to your guests, is this. I believe in everything he's saying, but I believe that the power of the brain and the acknowledgement of the power and how to use it should be taught to kids at a much earlier age. I'm thinking before they even get to kindergarten, like in pre-K, because they have to understand that the mind is the most powerful and best weapon that you'll ever have, and it's given to you free upon birth.
Oh, yeah.
Your thought process, your choices, these are all things that are given to you free, and it's your best weapon. And we fail to, well, number one, it's a product of poor leadership, because no one's teaching these kids that they have the mind and how to use it and the power of your thought and the law of attraction and the importance of having a goal, because when you have a goal, that's the fuel that gets the creative mind working, because it has nothing to do if you doesn't give it a goal. You have to give it a task, and once you give it a task, it goes from the conscious to the subconscious, which is where all the creative work takes place at. And it might take decades for your external world to come in line with your vision, but it'll never get started if you don't have a goal. So I just wanted to ask your guest, what would he think about teaching kids the power of their mind at a very young age? I'm thinking pre-kindergarten, thinking it's more important than the kid tying their shoes. As soon as they can tie shoes, they need to understand the power of the mind and know and be taught how to use it.
You want to know something? I really appreciate your comments, and I agree with you 100%. So I'm going to agree with you, but I'm going to give you a real life example of what I've done with my three children. So my oldest son is in second grade. He's going to be 8 years old in a few weeks. My second son is in the first grade. He's going to be 7 years old in July. And I have a 21-month-old daughter. All three of my children could read before they could talk.
Impressive.
Now, the reason that I'm saying this, see, like if you went on my Facebook page right now, you would see a video that I posted just a few days ago of my 21-month-old daughter reading. And she's just reading a few cards. But the point is that, you know, those wires are already, you know, being activated as we speak. So
it's like
people limit, people completely, I could talk about what you just asked me for hours, but I'm going to say it this way, and then I'm going to bring it all together. So Wanza Kunjufu, he's a social scientist, done a lot of work on uplifting our children through education. One thing that I read by him that really stirred me was he said that before the United States was an industrialized country, children were expected to contribute to their families, you know, in the same fashion that an adult is expected to contribute these days, as early as 4 and 5 years old. But as we became an industrialized country and laws began to change, we all of a sudden said that children were not adults until they were 18. But what we did not do was strategically continue to develop a vision, personal responsibility, obligation, duty, and you know, those type of qualities in our children. And we've actually done the exact opposite of that. We've actually dumbed down our children in many respects and set lower expectations because we weren't teaching all those skills. So to bring it full circle, as it relates to emotional intelligence, right? I'm a PQ coach. And I was talking directly about the law of attraction. And I believe that our emotions are the seat of our faith. Okay? The thing is that our faith and our belief system is rooted in logic. It's rooted in evidence. But the thing that empowers all of that is our emotions. If we were to go on a vacation to Hawaii and we were to observe a sunset, we could logically take in the beauty of that sunset, but it wouldn't stir us the way that it would if we could experience it emotionally. The emotions and the evidence is what creates, you know, our ability to manifest things. So what I do is I teach people to use what we call positive intelligence or PQ score, which is a positive quotient, which means, put really simple, how much does my brain and my mind and my thought process work for me as opposed or work against me as compared to working against me? And the tipping point for that, and there's assessments for this, but the tipping point is 75% of the time. So this is something that I ask people often for them to think about internally is if someone else said to me what I've said to myself, would I be their friends? Most of us are driven by pure negativity. And I'm going to break this down without trying to get too scientific, but this can be explained scientifically. So in our brain, you have two different sections of your brain. One of them is very primitive, and it's where fight or flight resides. Its sole purpose is to keep us alive. And then we have another portion of our brain where development takes place and growth and uplift. And when we are in those Tom and Jerry moments where it feels like we have the devil on one side speaking to us and the angel on the other, like that's very much a cartoon representation of how our brains work. And I would venture to say from a spiritual perspective that that part of your brain where development resides is the portion of the brain that allows you to submit to the Holy Spirit. That's the point where you truly develop that, and it allows you to vibrate and communicate with God. The other portion of your brain is rooted in survival. And just taking a slight turn and coming right back, there's a story in the Bible that talks about Jesus being in the wilderness. And he had been fasting for 40 days, and he was with the beasts. And the devil, or Satan, attacked him. And the significance of that story is the word devil and the word Satan. Both represent the same entity, but the words themselves tell you something about, you know, what he's doing. So anytime you read in the Bible the word devil, he's trying to deceive someone. He's trying to trick them. Well, you deceive someone in their mind. Anytime you see the word Satan, it means he's on an all-out attack. There's no deception at play. He is going for the kill. So coming back, that portion of the brain that is rooted in survival, a lot of times it deceives you. It actually sabotages you. And the reason is, as children, we encounter, so let me say this, that portion of your brain that's rooted in survival, it's not only there to keep you alive, you know, physically, but it's also there to keep you alive emotionally. So at that time where we really started developing that portion of our brain, we were only intended to stay alive long enough to pass on our genes. But, of course, you know, through creativity and ingenuity, we live long beyond that now. But the challenge is that if we are not aware of these two portions of the brain, we can live very successful lives on the outside and be driven and have careers and have wealth and have all these things, but completely be torn up and depressed and distraught and stressed and worried and all of these things constantly, despite the attainment. And the reason is that that portion of your brain functions like a sabotage, like a spy. And it'll get you through difficult times as a child. And it doesn't have to be trauma that you experience. You could have been the fat kid in the classroom or the girl who wasn't as pretty in her mind as some of the other girls. Or maybe your parent liked one of your siblings more than they liked you. It doesn't have to be an extremely traumatic event, but it just had to be something that cause you some emotional turmoil. So what happens is you start trying to build a framework in your mind that helps you navigate that so you don't have to feel those emotions. And it works. But it only works for a very short period of time. So as you grow up and you become older, and that portion of the brain where you're supposed to be developing, you're not yielding to that thought process, but you're still ensnared by that survival portion of your brain, what happens is you end up beating yourself to being successful. And your self-worth becomes attached to constant achievement. So if you're not achieving, you're not worthy. or maybe instead of achieving, you underachieve because you constantly avoid things. And I can go on for days about this. But what I do is I help people identify that survivor portion of their brain, and I help them identify when it's actively talking to them. And the first thing that I do is I teach them how to gain command of their brain. So they literally just practice stillness and quieting the mind. And then after we get about a week or two into that, we then transition to now let's address the one who sits in the seat of the survivor. Let's address that thing. We call it the judge in the framework so that it's easy to understand. So I'm going to take you through a visualization after I teach you how to start quieting your mind. I'm going to have you recall an event where the judge got the best of you. And after you've spent a week, almost 2 weeks, just learning to just bring it down, I'm going to put you in a situation where now it's going to be turned on immediately. And you're going to feel the tension. And everything that you've been trying to get away from, you're going to feel that immediately. And you're going to want to get away from it. And you're going to say, wow, you mean this is what's been pushing me? This is what's been holding me back from creating? And it's going to be a very life-changing thing. So then we start working on the ways that behavior and that thought process shows up through activity. So I'll give you an example, personal example. I'm hyper-rational, which means, and before I say this, I'm a Lean Six Sigma black belt. So I study data. I study trends. I figure out how to create graphs of processes so I can analyze them and improve them. I'm a very data-driven person. And when you're hyper-rational, what that means in a nutshell is that sometimes you treat people like they're data. But people have emotions. Data doesn't. So despite how data-driven a thought process can be, how much evidence I can present, if I don't stir someone emotionally, then I'm not functioning as a good leader. If I'm at home and my wife is complaining about something and I don't emotionally address her needs, then she doesn't stop complaining. So, you know, as I went through this training that I now coach people on, I learned to really, like, be in tune with people's emotions. I learned to think through the way that I was going to communicate certain things so that I didn't seem cold or separated. So we began to address some of those behaviors. And then after we attacked that judge and some of those saboteur behaviors, we then began to teach you how to yield to that development portion of your mind. That's what I do. And I can do it with families. I call it the PQ family. And what it does is it drives five things. Those five things is the ability to really explore opportunities. And for most of us, when it comes time to communicate with somebody that we don't agree with, we do not become fascinated or extremely curious and open-minded about what that person is trying to say. And oftentimes, because we refuse to do that, we don't make a lot of progress. So, you know, we try to create a framework that says if you are not in complete alignment with someone else, at least 10% of what they say is true. So find the 10% and figure out how to leverage that 10% so that you can move forward. I know that that's a very powerful thing between a man and a woman. And I know between siblings, where sometimes you have sibling rivalry, it can actually build sibling camaraderie. Another thing that we teach is something called empathy, right? And empathy is displayed in three ways. Empathy towards yourself, empathy towards, and then understanding empathetically situations that we encounter. All right, the next thing is innovation, right? And what we do is after we encounter an obstacle, we begin to think of outside-the-box solutions, and we try to gain new perspective on how to address those issues. Sometimes, in the words of my father, you can remain stuck on stupid. And it doesn't hurt anyone but yourself. The next one is navigate. This is extremely important for our children. It is to be able to choose a path that best aligns with your values and your mission. So when I used to talk about, when I mentioned like asking children to reflect as opposed to just reacting and then respond, really what I'm saying is, you know, take the time to really think about if the action that you're going to take is best aligned with your values and your mission. Your mission, what you're working towards. And that goes back to those goals that he mentioned. And then the last one is activate. And activate is to take decisive, laser-focused action without being distressed, without interference, without distraction. And as we transition from the survival brain to the development brain, those behaviors become fluid. And literally, for our children, if we can teach them to develop those skills, they will be better at determining what they're passionate about. They will be more apt to set goals and to try to figure out how to achieve them. So I know I just talked for a very long time, but he's absolutely right. We have to start with children early. I mentioned that my children all could read. I started teaching them at 3 months. I taught them sign language. I taught them early letter character recognition. And the very second that my kids transitioned from doing signs to reading words, I then started teaching them phonics. And to put it in perspective as it relates to results, my oldest son goes to the only school in the state of Indiana that focuses solely on gifted children. He went in at preschool, and he took their preschool assessment, and he did the best of any preschooler in the history of the school. And then guess what happened? My second son came behind him the following year, and he beat him. And I'm hoping that Delilah, who's got a few years behind them, that she will beat them. But what I can tell you is right now, both my oldest boys, they are working at the fifth and sixth grade level. And we are starting a curriculum called Kidpreneurs, where I'm starting to teach them about entrepreneurship. We have implemented a financial literacy program in the house. And I'm learning how to do some day trading. So I'm going to have my kids day trading on a simulator in hopes that we can all crack the code together, because I don't want my kids to embrace the belief that they have to go work for someone else to be able to earn a living. I want them to be able to do what they're passionate about. And if the entrepreneur lifestyle and work ethic and thought process will foster that, I want them to be able to pursue their passion and to not be a slave to money.
I totally agree. If you have a question or comment, dial 516-531-9540 and press 1. Caleb, could you please tell the audience how they could get in touch with you if they want to reach out to you?
Honestly, I'm in the process of launching a website. So I can't send you to a website, but the easiest thing to do is to just look me up on Facebook. I do have a business page. It's called The Ignited Soul Coaching. And basically my coaching is rooted in best practices for financial literacy. I teach entrepreneurship, and I teach emotional intelligence and solution-focused thinking. So if you're in need of any of those things, just follow me on Facebook. Send me an instant message. I'll get you over to the professional page. And as I'm launching these businesses electronically or over the web, because a lot of stuff that I've been doing has just been word of mouth. And I've been doing this for a very long time. So I'm trying to take my message, I guess, and share it with a broader audience. But that's the best way to get in touch with me right now. You know, you could always shoot me an email address, my first and last name at gmail.com. And, you know, as of right now, that's the easiest way to contact me.
So, Philip, I got a question for you. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I know you said that you taught your children sign language. What drove you to teach them sign language? So was it?
You know, it's actually.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just curious about, like, you know, what drove you to teach them sign. When I heard that, I was like, oh, snap, okay, I like that. And I just wanted to, you know, see what you thought, what your thought process was.
So it's actually really funny because I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Antoine Fisher, but the Antoine Fisher movie is very much very similar story to mine. So I grew up in poverty, and I really wasn't able to read until I was in middle school. And now I probably read about, I would say, 10 books a month, 10 to 20 books a month right now. I just can't stop learning. But that's just for you to kind of understand why I was so passionate about this. So what happened is when my wife and I found out we were with child, you know, I instantly said, well, I'm going to start doing some research to figure out, you know, when's the earliest I can start teaching them to read? And my wife said, well, that's awesome, but I want to teach them sign language. And it turned out to be an awesome combination. And the reason is, you know, you start this process when they're only 3 months old. And you have to follow that process for a very long time with a lot of discipline without any type of evidence that your child's learning to read. But when we added in sign language, it provided us with evidence that they were reading, because we could put up a flashcard that said juice or milk or diaper, and they would do the sign. So my wife's rationale for wanting to be able to do sign language was she wanted to learn it. She thought it was cool. But also, like, it allowed our children to be able to communicate with us what they wanted. And that's a huge gap to close, man, when you know, your daughter's crying and she says, I don't want milk, I want juice. You know, or
I think that's fascinating because my daughter, she's deaf. And so, like, I learned sign language. And then to go along with that, I worked at a daycare where I implemented, you know, sign language policies, teaching students to sign, teaching, you know, some of the faculties that was interested in it. So I was just curious, you know, to what took you that way. I know research study has shown that, you know, using sign language with children at a very early age stimulates learning and stimulates self-growth and reflection as well. So, like, by you doing it, I just thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It was a great combination. Now, I've added to that all three kids. So that was what we started with, where we started adding in what I'm going to call phonics curriculum. We started adding in what I'm going to call, like, mental fitness tests, like being able to discriminate, for instance. So let's say we threw down four cards. One of them was a winter hat, a winter coat, and winter boots, and the other one was a swimsuit. Like, which one doesn't go with the other three cards? And when you have young children that are able to discriminate like that, what you're doing is you're building critical thinking skills into them. So we just started looking for different ways to challenge them and to get them to think, you know. And it requires some intentionality, but right now I've kind of reached a point where I'm trying to determine if I'm just going to promote the curriculums that we've used and, like, create a master class on, you know, how to string them all together and the things that we did that were not in those classes to develop our kids, or if I want to actually create my own curriculum. I used to be a school teacher before I started doing continuous improvement work too. So that's another variable in there.
So are your kids homeschool or do they go to public school?
Actually, my kids go to a private school now. Before they went to a private school, we just implemented our curriculum. Me and my wife both started working. We were able to give the curriculum to our sister-in-law, and she was able to teach them. So I know, like, my sister-in-law is very good at working with children, but I know that if someone willing to follow a system, that they can nurture their children to really be able to develop these skills.
Well, that's fantastic. And then are you going to have any more kids?
You know what? I'm not sure. it's expensive, man. You know, it's funny. I was talking with a professional mentor, man. Somebody that's much further along Six Sigma practice than I am, and somehow we started talking about our children, and he basically just stopped me and said, "Caleb, I think you need to stop doing Six Sigma, man, and I think you just need to focus on having more kids." But yeah, I'm not. I think my baby girl is probably going to be our last one.
Gotcha. I mean, that's fantastic. And then, like you said, you've been a teacher, you've been a life counseling coach as well. You know, I guess, like, what are some of your passions? What are some of the things that just drive you? Seems like you've had a pretty good, you know, run at it. What are some things that, you know, you felt like have paved the way for you?
You know what, man? Growing up the way that I did, for some people, man, it can be very destructive. But for me, I gained some unique perspective, man, and what I always said is growing up poor the way that I did, because I slept underneath bridges and ate out of garbage cans poor. What it taught me was what you didn't need to have to be happy. And as I got to a place in life where I had a little bit more stability, man, and I started really understanding the benefit of learning, I started studying best practices for living. The first book I ever read was The Slave Narratives of Frederick Douglass. The second book that I read was The Autobiography of Malcolm X. The third book I read was The Bible. And the fourth book I read was an anthology of African-American literature. And my favorite poet was Melvin B. Tolson, who was, I think, Denzel Washington, if I'm not mistaken, played Melvin B. Tolson in The Great Debaters. Wasn't that Denzel that was teaching the kids how to debate? Anyway.
Yeah.
So for me, my passion, man, is helping people to unlock to the furthest their greatest potential, and that is through self-knowledge. So when I say, you know, leadership or passion, all these things can't be taught. It can only be discovered. Like, I can teach you, I can put you on the path of discovery. I can teach you the principles, but you got to really, truly embrace them and dig and search. And once you find them, like once you find that tipping point, you can do amazing things. But until you reach that point, a lot of times fear and doubt are going to...
I don't want to interrupt you. I just want to let you know we got a caller here, 8051, want to hop in. I think they have a question or comment. We got about, like, 2 minutes left in the show, so I definitely want to get them on the air.
Okay.
8051?
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I'd like to say I really am enjoying your conversation. And about you having more children, I'm just trying to figure out, are you trying to beat your dad?
That's impossible.
I know. Also, my other question, cousin, I am your cousin. Do you travel, seminars or anything? Because I would like for you to come to see me, and I'd like for you to talk to the after school program.
I'd love to. We just schedule it and I'll be there.
Well, I'll have to do you through Messenger because I think that's how I talk to you anyway. But
I'll give you his number.
I can tell you one thing. Your dad would have been very proud of you and how much you have accomplished. And I think you were, in a way, following in his footsteps. Because it sounded like I was listening to a conversation with him.
You're absolutely right. My dad is responsible for me discovering my passion. He's the one that put me on this path.
Because he definitely was a free spirit.
Yep.
Well, Caleb, I want to thank you for coming on the show. We're going to talk. And I enjoyed it, and you're going to have to come back again.
Anytime.